saved that cow.
Welcome to episode 4 of the Weird Science New 52 Review Podcast. Hey, Eric, how you doing?
Pretty good, Jim. How are you?
How you doing? I thought that this is a somber episode. I feel like I have to class myself up a bit because this book, well, we are talking about Animal Man Volume 1, The Hunt. And to me, this seems, for people who joined in with Rebirth especially, I think that this is going to be a shock to some people reading this because it doesn't really jive with anything that we've seen in Rebirth especially, but even in the New 52. I'm glad that we have this, like, the way that we've set up. We just talked about the Justice League last episode, and to jump into something, say, like a Batman or a Superman or Green Lantern, that seems too easy. You know what I mean? This one is a book, this Animal Man book, is a book that is a dark book. It's more of a horror book than anything else.
Well, that's the thing is, you know, when the New 52 came out, they gave the, like, these different categories for all these different ones. You know, like Young Justice, The Extreme, The Dark books and shit like that.
Yep.
And even going in the New 52, this felt like an oddball just because of how vertigo it felt compared to everything else.
And you say that, and I do want to give Jeff Lemire. It's Jeff Lemire and Travel Foreman who do this. They're the main creative team. Obviously, Jeff Lemire writing and Travel Foreman on art. And really, they did not go into this thinking, okay, now that Vertigo's part of the DC, you know, wide, the whole deal, we have to make it more of a superhero costume book. They really didn't. They really went full out. This could be a Vertigo book right now. It could be, really, to me, if you are reading a bunch of different comics, to me, it feels more like an Image book even than what we get now in the Rebirth DCU. It is so dark and such a like an oddball title, and I do really like it. I know,
but with that, with saying that though, it's like we had, this is pretty much the most critically acclaimed freaking series of the New 52 when it first started.
Yeah, when it first started, when I went through and looked at all of the initial reviews, this definitely was the one that seemed to really hit. And I would like, I said to you even before this week, I said that as we went on, you got a Constantine book. Obviously, you have a Swamp Thing, and this really does tie in immediately into the Swamp Thing book.
Oh, yeah.
But I think that now, like when they're doing Constantine now, the Hellblazer book that they're doing now in the Rebirth, I almost want them to go back and read this and read how you can still incorporate that Vertigo feel into the DCU, because really that new Hellblazer book and even the Constantine book, I know that you like the one Constantine run in the New 52, but still it didn't feel like an old Constantine book.
No, not at all. The reason I like that Constantine book is because it felt like Constantine completely merged into the DC universe. Yes. Along with all the rest of the superheroes.
Now,
I like
now,
the idea of that.
With the Hellblazer book, and even after that run that you liked, it started to get a little watered down. You know, it seemed like it almost lost track of what it was and then wasn't even tying in as well. That's how I think the Rebirth now.
The second one before Rebirth during the DCYU, it really felt like all it wanted to do was say, you know what, Constantine's bisexual. We're going to run a series around that
whole
idea. Yeah,
we're going to keep doing this
and
go to town with it. But I really like this. I will say, again, it is Animal Man Volume 1, The Hunt. It's written by Jeff Lemire with art by Trell Foreman. And I will tell you, this is another weird one because we do the Justice League. We don't have to explain any character or anything about it. This really just throws you in. And it's not even like if you're sitting there thinking, oh, man, you know what? I wish I was an expert in Animal Man. Animal Man isn't a character that was huge really ever until Grant Morrison did take it to make it a little more. But it's still a cult hero.
And
you know what I mean?
Vertigo right there.
Yeah,
you know,
and it's like, still a cult hero. He was never, you know, the number one man or anything like that. Grant Morrison, it was the same time that they got Neil Gaiman. DC got a bunch of British
Gaiman
writers.
Sandman,
and threw it. Game Damon on Sandman.
Alan
Moore was doing Swamp Thing. And Grant Morrison was doing Animal Man. And they kind of brought this British, you know, deal to it. And all three of those
British
books were going.
Invasion of comics.
Yeah, yeah. So when they announced the New 52 and they announced Animal Man, I'm sure that some people just rolled their eyes and thought, oh, here we go. What are we going to do with this? And really, Jeff Lemire takes it and he doesn't make Animal Man. Like, you could have went and said, okay, Animal Man's going to – I'm going to get him in the costume. I'm going to freaking make him doing this and that. And he's going to be throwing animal powers all over the place. And it's not. It really isn't. But before I do that, I'll even give you a little background of the character. Animal Man, who is – Bernhard Buddy Baker is a fictional character superhero in the DC Comics universe. As a result of being in proximity to an exploding extraterrestrial spaceship. Now, this is the old continuity.
Yeah.
Buddy Baker acquires the ability to temporarily borrow the abilities of animals, such as a bird's flight or the proportionate strength of an ant. You know, using these powers, Baker fights crime as the costumed superhero Animal Man. And he first appeared in Strange Adventures number 180, created by writer Dave Wood and artist Carmine Infantino. He made a few appearances before disappearing into obscurity. And Buddy went on to star in his own solo series, initially intended to be a four-issue miniseries until he was revamped post-Crisis on Infinite Earths by writer Grant Morrison, penciler Chaz Chirag, and cover artist Brian Bolan. And that is, if you look up, people say it's Grant Morrison's run that everybody points to with.
I was looking a bit into Grant Morrison's run too, and it's still back in the 80s. It was this kind of, you know, meta shit that really bothers me. And like, I'm telling you, there was a thing where Buddy Baker was in a limbo period where he saw other, like, you know, minor characters who weren't being used. And then he eventually found Grant Morrison, the writer, because he wanted to find out, you know, why did you kill my family? This whole thing, I'm like, oh my God,
and it became very meta. Yeah, Reggie and Chris in their Cosmic Treadmill podcast, they even did one of the ones that was a meta type thing, that it was the Wile E. Coyote was actually the reason why he lived in this cartoon world and kept getting destroyed like he does in the Roadrunner cartoon, is to protect our world because he was part of the
crazy.
I mean, it's crazy. And even then, it almost has like that empty hand type thing. You have the artist drawing hand in there and all that sort of thing. So it's typical Grant Morrison stuff. But even in the Grant Morrison things, and even before, you do have a little bit of what ended up in this New 52. You have his family. You have Buddy, his wife.
Yeah, Grant really took that and ran with it.
Yeah, and his daughter Maxine and his son Cliff. And that is really what I really think that this differentiates itself to the rest of the New 52. And basically, I'll even say, I wrote down three things that I really do think that it sets itself apart from the rest of the New 52. And it's that, number one, it is a very Vertigo feeling book. They go when Vertigo, Milestone, and Milestone. I keep saying it because of you. Milestone and the DCU proper combined at the end of Flashpoint.
And
Wildstorm. A lot of the people went with these and tried to make their new version, whatever. This really does feel like an extension of the Vertigo series and the Vertigo feel of that. So I really do give Jeff Lemire full credit for doing it. The next part is Buddy, he doesn't have a secret identity. He is Animal Man, and people know he's Animal Man. And that starts off right away. It hits
Animal
you
Man,
right away.
Actor, activist, yes, stuntman.
Exactly. And the other part is, one of the things that people complain the most about in the New 52 is that there was no family. There was no love. You didn't have Lois and Clark together. You didn't have all these things. Buddy has a family. And not only that, his family is pretty much the focus. Yes, he's Animal Man, but really this book is all about a superhero struggling with being a superhero as well as having a family. You throw in the fact that his youngest daughter is pretty much a superhero herself and him trying to protect her. But it really is about Buddy as a parent and a husband trying to get through.
The weird part about that is, you know, people wanted that whole Lois and Clark thing. You know, the hope that we have in Rebirth now, like the family aspect, we have that here. It's a dysfunctional family that would sell on the fucking edge of fucking being destroyed.
And that's the thing I give Jeff Lemire, and even before that with Grant Morrison and all the – it's a very realistic look of a family that has a superhero as part of the family, especially a parent. Because, yeah, there's struggles. And, again, he doesn't have a secret identity. So you think about all those things. We're dealing with it mainly right now in the Flash book, in Rebirth, where Barry doesn't want to tell Iris his secret identity because he wants to protect her. He wants to be able to do that. Just imagine that not only does Buddy, he's out and about, but he actually has kids. And a wife that anybody at any point can target to get back at him. Now, as the book opens, he's not really being Animal Man so much. He's backed away. And I have this little thing. It's in the post-Flashpoint universe. Buddy took the place of the previous Avatar of the Red after he was killed by the Roach champion Anton Arcane. And this is something that comes later. Buddy is unlike previous Animal Men, as he was not born into the role of Avatar, but instead was manufactured through false means. The Parliament of Limbs created a narrative he would understand and allowed their tailors to manipulate Buddy. And this is something that we will deal with as we go on in these six issues. He was tapped into the power of the Red and given his costume to fit in with the emergence of new heroes around the world. 5 years later, and Buddy is more of a retired hero than an active participant in the heroic world. He's moved on from being a vigilante to becoming a common face in pop culture, taking up a bigger role in films, acting as first a stuntman and then an actor in an indie film. Due to his very public endorsement and involvement in animal rights, Buddy's face has been adopted as an icon. And I will say also, this book, Jeff Lemire really could go full out social justice warrior. Now, this was back in 2011, and that wasn't exactly the hippest thing to do, but you could do that. But there is that little bit of it in there. He's a vegetarian.
I'm telling you, getting into this whole thing, getting ready for this podcast, I went out and I looked some different things up. So I even looked up The Hunt, Volume 1 of Animal Man on Amazon. I just wanted to look at the scores that people gave it, the regular people scores. And there was one person who gave it one star and who was pissed because there was not enough vegan commentary in the book, which they thought was going to be all about the animal activists. Buddy calls animals it and shit like that. And like, there's not enough vegan stuff. I'm like, well, I understand that this is what the person wanted then. They just wanted a vegan commentary instead of justice warrior. Yeah,
there's always going to be. Now, again, this is, we're talking 6 years ago when, people were there. But it is there. There is in fact, the whole thing starts out with Ellen, Buddy's wife, making a meal. And if you just look, there's no meat. He is a vegan. He is. And it really does start out with this story that's in like a New Yorker type thing that is written about him and basically sets you up. By Jeff Lemire. And it sets you up an interview of him saying, listen, I've backed off a bit from being Animal Man. But I'm a spokesman for, vegan rights and all this stuff. He's an animal rights activist, but he's not in your face about it. In your face. But I do like it. I like the way it sets up.
Wiggity whack.
Yeah, because then it goes. And right away, you see Jeff Lemire is making it very obvious that this is a book about a family and how they're dealing with things. And boy, shit goes wrong quick. And I will say, right before we get to this fully going out, this is a book that is – it's hard to explain a lot of it. I will say that if you like dark books, if you like horror books, if you I even any books, I'm telling you, this is a good book. This trade is very good. I don't think that we can really give it full justice just talking about it. It's visual.
It's very visual, especially in the horror aspect of it. 'Cause I'm telling you, when I got back into comics and said I'm going to give the New 52 a try, I actually stayed away from Animal Man because I just wanted pure superheroes.
Yeah,
when I would look at the Animal Man covers, they were a little too gross for me. Like, I love horror movies and I love anything horror, but that's not what I was going for. When I saw it with the freaking veins ripping out of Buddy Baker and all this other shit, I'm like, maybe not right now.
Yeah, and I'll tell you, when you first look at it, I don't know about – I don't know about you, but when I saw the art first, Travel Foreman's art, which is the bulk of this, I kind of – it's something that it grew on me. Through these issues.
It initially threw me off.
Yes, it threw me off.
It's not normally
really,
my style, but as I progressed through this first arc, it really grew on me.
Yes.
And I'm like, this fits the story perfectly.
It does. It is a great – I'll use the review 101. It's a great fit for art to story. But it does throw you off at first. If you're used to like really detailed art, it's very – it's very stylistic. It's very to this horror aspect of it. And even at first, it's hard to, when you start getting into the horror parts of it, it even can be a little confusing at first until you wrap your head around how it looks. But then once you do, boy, it really does fit. And it's a really good story. Now, I say this, we did our Justice League one, the last episode, and I think that was 2 hours. I don't think this is going to last as long because a lot of it is visual. A lot of it is
fast read.
It's very fast. It's very emotional and things like that. But I will tell you right now before we go on, I think everybody should check it out. If you're at least listening to this because you're interested in what happened in the New 52 or whatnot, you could do yourself a favor. Go and buy this first arc at least, and it's really, really good.
And I'm pretty sure you get this trade on sale pretty cheap at this point.
Yeah, yeah. In fact, I got it as a prize for the DC Squadcast. They have a thing where you review their podcast on iTunes. I did, and I won, Eric. I won their contest, and they said, "Hey, what do you want?" I said, "I wanted this," I said, "I'll get Animal Man for this." And now I got it digitally as well because it's easier to go through. I don't like when you hear podcasts and they're flipping pages.
No.
But even just looking through it, I actually read through it once in the trade. Man, it's such a good trade. It really is. And it's one of those where you want to be a pretentious comic book reader, you can throw that out there and freaking people think you're the greatest thing ever.
That's
this
right.
Isn't like they're going to go, "Oh, what's this Batwing or something?" You're like, "No, Animal Man looks
Animal cool." Man.
It actually really does come off more of like an independent comic than anything that it really is in the DCU now, especially. But it starts off, and Buddy and his wife, Ellen, they're making dinner and they're getting it ready. And Buddy had just done this interview. It just come out. He's in a movie called Tights, I believe called.
When you start this series out, you actually get to see the interview about Buddy Baker. And then when we get done with that, we actually go to Buddy reading it in the kitchen while Ellen prepares dinner.
Yeah. And she's preparing dinner and they're talking. And Buddy is talking about, "Hey, you know what? I sound like a pretentious prick. I hope I didn't come across as a jerk." But he also in his mind later even says it bothers him a little, this interview, because while he's doing the interview, and you do see it when you read the interview before this starts, he does seem a little embarrassed to be Animal Man. Like Animal Man is a thing of the past. He's kind of put that aside. He's moving on. He was a stuntman. Now he's an actor in this indie film. And the indie film, it's a lot like Birdman.
It really reminded me of the idea of Birdman as if if Michael Keaton in Birdman was an actual superhero instead of an actor portraying
instead of an actor. But yes, he portrays a superhero who has, you know, it resembles his life now.
Yeah.
Except that he is still Animal Man. But he hasn't done it in a while. And it's funny because as he's talking to his wife, he's talking about Animal Man and stuff. And she's like, she even says at the point, like, "It's not like you've been doing that anymore, you know, being Animal Man."
Anywhere to get a dig in. God damn.
Yeah. Yeah. And it's weird because this is almost like every guy who's married has had this dig, even girlfriend and boyfriend. Like you mentioned something like, you've done that lately.
Exactly.
And he's like, "Boy, I thought that you would have liked that before. You were begging me not to be that." And that it's typical husband wife. It's written very well. In the meantime, his young daughter, Maxine, comes in and she has her stuffed animal, Mr. Woofers.
And she comes in. And I'm telling you, Mr. Woofers, I did not read this previous to us doing this, and I thought Mr. Woofers, there was something wrong with this goddamn stuff. That really reminded me of a horror movie feel where she's like, "Mr. Woofers wants this and that." I'm like, I don't trust that stuffed animal.
She starts talking with her finger, but she's really good, and she's just a young girl. She wants a pet, and she says, "You know, Mr. Woofers and me want a dog. We want a dog, Daddy." And Buddy has to explain, "Listen, I told you before, we can't get an animal because if I start bonding with one animal in particular, it messes up my connection to all the other animals and my powers might not work." And I thought that was an awesome explanation.
Right off the bat, it's really cool just to throw it out there, the whole idea, like how sensitive his connection to the life web is and how he
want
to do anything to damage that. Like they have had pets before that we find out have and died.
He
said, you know, never again, because he did have his connection and it did screw him up previously.
Yeah, it screwed him up.
Like
a bit.
This whole little, it's a really really quick thrown out there thing.
It
really gets you connected to what the powers are and how they work.
Of the things, and going through this book, there's a lot of times where stuff like this happens where it's just like, it seems like a throwaway line. but it's really, really good. And that's where he says, you know what? My powers might not work as well. And that's when his wife Ellen says, not like you use them anymore, like under her fucking breath. You bitch. And then it's funny because even when he says, what was that supposed to mean? She's like, nothing, eagle ears. I'm like, boy, she throws shade at him nonstop. But then he says, I remember when you wanted me to stop playing superhero. And in the meantime, Maxine is behind them, like glaring at him with Mr. Woofers, and I'm telling you, I fell in love with her immediately. I love how she's screaming and she's all upset. She's just a cute little kid. You find out later.
I actually thought this was terrifying. Like, I don't trust
really
this little girl.
I really liked her. And then you find out later, though, there is a lot more to her. But yeah, she keeps begging and begging.
She spent this entire arc just scaring the shit out of me nonstop.
Yeah. She'll be in your dreams and nightmares, Eric. In the meantime, the other child, Cliff, the boy, comes running in, and I told you, and he's been watching the news, and he sees that there is a guy holding up people at a hospital. And the thing is, he comes in with this goddamn ginger mullet, flies in. I'm like, I told you, he is, at the least, he's the red-haired kid that's the friend in Terminator 2. But to me, he's Eddie Furlong and that kid
combined.
And
also in Salute Your Shorts.
Yeah, and Salute Your Shorts. I hate that kid, but I like Cliff right away. And I like the fact that I hate to say it, he looks like white trash, right?
Yeah,
he really does. I like that style. I like that this is a realistic look at a family. Somebody has to tell him to cut that hair, Eric. That style has gone out. Next thing, he's going to have a rat tail or something.
I'm telling you, I'll see as we progress, because I really thought by the end of this first arc that look for him had changed quite a bit.
Well, to see. I think the art, well, travel for him and near the end of this arc started not being able to finish full issues. And I think it was Steve Pugh that jumped on.
Okay, that makes sense.
And I think the art started changing. And in fact, later on, Travel Foreman, a little bit after this 6-issue arc, he actually left the book. I don't know why. I think he just couldn't keep the pace or whatever. But yeah, there is somebody holding up the hospital, and Buddy jumps in. And it's one of those things, like, he had just done that interview where he kind of seemed like he thought he was embarrassed to be Animal Man. He was just talking it to his wife, Ellen.
His wife's giving him shit.
So he's like, fuck it, I'm going to go. And right there, again, you want to talk about a cool thing of a family, he's going to go do it. His son Cliff wants to go, but he has to say, no, you can't come. But hey, any clean costumes around? You know where my Animal Man costumes are? And Ellen's like, I think there's one in the laundry room, but make sure you take your boots off outside before you come home. And, you know, get mud all over the place and track things all
Real
over the house.
Family man.
Yeah, and I'm like, boy, this is really pushing that, you know what? She is not that impressed. You know, you can go and play your Animal Man. And she says even before that you were a lot happier when you were Animal Man. So he does. He goes to this hospital, and it's a very sad scene. It's a children's wing of a hospital ward where there's cancer patients, and this guy, his daughter had just died. His daughter had died a couple weeks ago, and in his mind cracked.
Yeah,
and
he basically snapped at this point.
He snapped, and basically in his mind he can't accept that his daughter has died. So
and he believes the hospital still has her
he
somewhere.
He makes up an idea in his head when he snapped that they have kidnapped her, that they just won't give her back. And he comes in, and the guy's like, you know, who the fuck are you? And I like it. He takes off his, you know, he doesn't really have a mask.
No,
he
but
has
he takes
like
the
that
whole
cowl
thing
type
off.
Thing.
Exactly,
he takes it off and says, and right away, he even thinks to himself, like, boy, I have kids too. You know, what would I do? And he's like, I can't do that. The guy shoots him. He ends up shooting him. And this is where we see really, now we just saw him fly, obviously. So,
right.
But this is the first time we see him selecting powers.
And we saw in the freaking Rebirth with, you know, Rebirth of Vixen, how she went through and got her powers, and you saw the cool outline around it. Like, we thought it looked really amazing. This is cool as well, just more gross.
Yeah, so, this like, is very gross. It's very to the life. Yeah, it's very to the red. And basically, I like it because it's not one of those things where he just got shot.
Yeah.
Obviously, he's panicking. He's trying to, and he's reaching in to find a power that's going to save him from this bullet wound. And he's panicking. So he doesn't think right away. Like, it's not like all of a sudden he thinks, you know, Stegosaurus, and boom, or, you know, what ends up being Rhino. He's like, rat, no, dog, no, because fish, no, because he's freaking out. He just got shot. And then he realizes, you know, Rhino. And, yes, Rhino. And that takes over. And then we get probably my favorite part of this entire series that I told you, because he's there and he knows that this guy He obviously, he's dangerous. He just shot. He's not a bad guy per se, but he might hurt some kids, so he's got to act. And he says, I grab my favorite action hero cocktail of animal ability, strength of an elephant, reflexes of a fly, speed of a cheetah. And I said, and me and you both agree, it very much, if you're a video game player, it very much is like a role-playing game where you have certain attacks and certain, like you know,
defenses that you do. And not only that, like, when you go into a role-playing game, you have an idea of the stuff you want. If you played other role-playing games, you have a set stuff that you know you want to do or try out at least when right from the get-go, and that's exactly what it reminds me of.
And I've never seen this, like even with Vixen in the new book in the JLA, I like this that shows he has been doing this. It shows that Jeff Lemire has thought it through, and it really makes sense. It really makes sense for you to – it's almost like – it's not a cheat code, but it almost it's a setup to what he normally does, and then it reacts from that, and it ends with the bark of a dog that he said he usually freaks people out.
Just intimidates people, yeah.
Yeah, and he goes, and he ends up knocking this guy out. And when he knocks him out, he is sitting there, and his police officer friend – I forget, what was
Kershaw,
his name?
Kershaw, I believe.
Kershaw, yeah. He comes, and he's – yeah, Detective Crenshaw.
Crenshaw, thank you.
When he goes and knocks him out, he's like, listen, can you help this guy? Like, Buddy Baker, he is a good guy. He reminds me a lot in that way of The Flash. Right. Like, he's thinking more of other people mostly through all of this than himself. But he says, listen, I hope everybody's okay. You know, this guy needs help. He doesn't, you know, he's bad, but he needs some help. And that's where Detective Crenshaw says, Animal Man, your eyes. And they go, and this is where you start getting, like, the hard deal.
Oh, God.
He is bleeding out of his eyes. And I do think that this is what happened is he ends up having a doctor come and explain to him, like, oh, nothing seems wrong. There's no wounds. And when Buddy says, you know what? I feel better than I ever have. I do think that this is, he has tapped into the red at that point when he went and attacked that more than he has in the past, which caused him to bleed out the blood
and
of
also,
the red.
And also, I was thinking as well, you know, at this point too, the red seems to be reaching out to him and
Maxine
more.
Yes, I do think it is.
And
yeah.
He, in my mind, you know, he's put this Animal Man and the powers for the most part aside. Like, he hasn't really done it a lot to tap into it. And now that the red is actually reaching out and he is reaching back in, it has made more of a connection than ever.
I agree. I think that this is more of a connection than he's ever felt. Like, he feels, he even says, I feel great. I feel like, you know, I feel more of a connection. I've never felt this strong in a while. And the doctor's like, hey, I want to do more tests. He's like, no, I got to get home. And he goes home, and again, he uses his abilities. He's trying to walk through the house without being heard. He uses the weight of a bumblebee so that he doesn't wake the kids, and it's really good.
The thing is, too, that there's no reason for it, but I still enjoy. He's like, man, I got to fix these creaky floorboards.
Yeah.
Because one of the kids, weight of a bumblebee. And I'm like,
yeah,
you don't
need
that.
It's really
good. You know what? You're just adding to that whole family and father aspect.
Exactly.
To it, like, you know, and I like it so much.
And I'm telling you, this is why I really like Jeff Lemire. And I want him back at DC. This book, the little things that he adds just add so much to the characters and to the story. There's not a lot of shit in this whole series, this arc that we're doing, that you would say, boy, why did we have that? Or like, almost everything goes well with the story and adds to it. And even
the
when
character.
he looks in at Maxine, and she's there, and she has like a trillion animal stuffed animals. And even then, I'm like, that's so cool.
And then he feels bad for not being able to get her a dog that she wants.
Yeah, and he feels bad about it. And then he lays down and he says, you know what? The reason why I can do all this is because of my wife, Ellen, that she has let me do all this. With her, I'm anchored. I know who I really am. And unfortunately, as it goes on, if you keep continuing on, shit goes wrong a bit.
Yeah.
And that does happen. And a lot of the stuff in this first arc, as you're reading, if you know what's going to happen later, I won't spoil it, but when you know what's going to happen later, it actually means even more while you're reading this and seeing what goes on. But even then, he has to go to sleep, but he's jazzed up, as they say.
Yeah.
So he uses the power of a catnap. I'm like, this is just
so cool.
Good. It's so cool. I want to be Animal Man. But then he goes and he has a dream. And really, to me, again, he just tapped into the red more than he ever has, into the life web. And I think that this is a residual of it, because he does have a pretty much a premonition dream where he dreams that Cliff is running away from Maxine, that his daughter is going crazy. Cliff doesn't want to be there. It seems like in this dream that Maxine had killed the mother, because he's like, you don't want to know what happened to Mom. And he's like, what's going on? And Buddy's trying to figure it out. And
Cliff
then sees
turns
that Cliff.
Around.
Yeah, oh my
guts
God.
Just fall out
his
right in
guts
front.
Are
like,
just
Jesus
falling
Christ.
Out. And then all of a sudden you get a crazy ass ass kaiju freaking Mr. Woofers. So right there when you were like thinking that he was crazy, and this is in this dream. And there's Maxine, and she has the little animal girl outfit on, which is cute, but it's not cute. And this is all done. This art is done in like a black and white grayish with except for the red, for the blood. Except for the guts and things like that, because Buddy or Cliff is still bleeding. Buddy's holding him, and there's a puddle of red blood underneath. And Maxine says, come on, we have to go before they get us. They're following us. And he's like, who? And he's like, the hunters, the men that they dress as men. And really, this is a premonition of what's going on.
Oh, yeah.
And they go, and Maxine and Mr. Woofers go into a river of blood and says, you know, this is where we have to go. This is where we hide. They won't be able to get us. We have to get to the tree and do this. And then that's when Buddy ends up being pretty much just veins. Ugh. And then Maxine says, it's them, too late. We're all going to die now. And Buddy keeps like, what are they? What are they? And then you see the rot. And this is the first thing you see. Now, again, this is a dream, but it's pretty accurate of what's happening.
Oh, yeah.
The rot are in the red.
Rot are represented by what we'll come to find out are the Hunters Three.
Yeah, the Hunters
almost
Three.
Like almost like the avatars of the rot at this point, yes, who are just able to come out into the world and do the bidding of the rot
itself.
And they're
just disgusting. They're just disgusting. And when they say, we are your child's true fathers, the Hunters Three. And that kind of comes into play later as well. But Buddy wakes up. He's, Jesus Christ, you know, I would too. He's startled, but when he wakes up, he wants to know where his wife is, and she's yelling, Buddy, come on right now, you have to come down. And it's Maxine. She's out in the yard. Now, it is nighttime. It's weird because you have it. It looks like it's 1:23. I don't know that the art really calls out that it's nighttime well enough. It almost seems like it's afternoon, but it is the middle of the night, and she's there playing with dead animals. And I'm not saying she's playing, these animals are playing with her as well. They have come to life. Skeletons and, you know, half, you know, decayed animals have all gone, and she's just there.
I was just looking through this thing here, because when Buddy went to sleep, it was 1:25.
Yeah.
And now it's 1:23.
Yeah, I think he slept longer than he thought. I think slept almost 12 hours because he's just, he's exhausted. He had this crazy dream for all that time. But the only reason I say is as it goes on, Buddy even says, hey, you got to get those animals buried before, sunlight, before the sun rises. So
That's 7:23 when he wakes up.
I just
put a magnifying glass so you can barely see that top one.
Okay.
Yeah.
Well, it's getting darker. It's not, then it makes sense. It's not exactly dark. I thought it was actually in, because I think that he actually says, yeah, you got to bury those before the sun comes up. But that actually ends the first issue. And when we go to the next issue, it does start right up. And now I know when we talked about the Justice League, we actually did it as a full out, the trade.
Like the
we
trade,
actually have these as six individual issues, so you'll have to forgive us for pausing a second in between. But yeah, Maxine is basically playing with dead animals, and they're playing. And right away, you have to think of Pet Sematary.
I immediately thought of Pet Sematary. Yeah. And honestly, children shouldn't play with dead things.
Yeah, that
thing
too.
When I got done this first issue, it didn't occur to me that these animals, like, I thought she had just dug up animals and
she was playing with dead animals.
It never occurred to me that these things were actually alive. I thought she might have set them up to look a certain way, but nowhere in my mind when we ended this first issue did I think these things are alive and moving around.
Yeah. Now, and this is also great because now you have the mother, Ellen, who's just basically, she sees her 4-year-old girl who now can reanimate the dead. And she knows, obviously Buddy is Animal Man. So there is a possibility. She even says later, like, I always knew there was a possibility of this. This is a bit beyond it. And I don't think if you would ask me, if she was actually here, she'd probably say, you know what? I kind of was hoping it wouldn't happen. But even if it did, it'd be later. I mean, she is such a little girl. Cliff, though, is crazy.
She's 4 years old.
Yeah. Cliff is crazy right away. Freaking Buddy's like, you got to put them away. You got to put them back right now. Cliff doesn't want her to. He wants to go get his fucking camera and make movies.
These are cool, Dad.
Yeah, he's like, oh, this is cool. And as he runs away, Buddy then leans down, and that's when Maxine says, I heard them, Daddy. They were calling for me from the place. And Buddy says, the place, and you start seeing that shit's going wrong on Buddy's body. This is where you get that all of a sudden he's getting these blood tattoos. It starts right there. You can see it on the arm, right. And it's going. And all of a sudden he's like, oh, my God, what's the place? And then she points to Buddy and says, that place. And that's when this is probably one of the grossest pictures in the whole deal, because he is bleeding out his eyes again, but they're making a tattoo, and it ends up being the tattoo of the life tree and actually the whole map of the red. And that's where she says, the red place. And we go on, and that's where you see Cliff is actually making photos and videos of these fucking dead animals, and they're all playing around, they're jumping around the freaking thing. And it's funny because Maxine is freaking giving the one skeleton, which I think is a cat, drink of water. It's Mrs. Pickles.
It's just going right through it. And yeah, it's just going right through. You're making a mess, Maxine.
Oh. Yeah, and they're like, you shouldn't do that. You're getting milk all over it. Oh, no, it's not a thing. It's a she. And this is where I think that, like you said, in that thing on the Amazon where they're like, oh, they call them things or whatever, that's Ellen. I don't really think that Buddy really says that. People are weird. But
people are weird.
Maxine is trying to take care of a goddamn skeleton.
This part, though, there does seem to be an inconsistency, though, because, well, you know, I just blew that goddamn timer up, because for some reason I'm really focused on the timeline right now, because
it says
3:45 a.m. while they're all sitting in the kitchen here.
That's what I thought,
And I'm just like, you know, because he went to bed at 1:25. When he woke up, it looked like it was 7:23, okay. But he also, if you, like, you saw 1:23, that doesn't make any goddamn sense to begin with. Now we're at 3:45
in the
morning.
Unless he slept for 12 hours and then woke up in the night.
I don't know, or 24 hours.
But I knew that, like I said, I knew at some point they said that it was night, because he basically says to Cliff, you know, you got to go and cover those things up before it gets light out. And I like Cliff puts on his hat. He's like, back in a minute. He's got that shovel. Off he goes.
Let me get my shovel, Daddy.
Yeah, and I also like, because Cliff really, he takes everything in stride. There are dead animals. He wants to take videos of them. His dad all of a sudden has the worst looking fucking crazy ass tattoos. He's like, that's badass, Dad. He really likes it. And as it goes, Buddy's trying to figure it out. He's trying to figure out, you know, these things aren't coming off. I don't understand what's going on. I did bleed through my eyes before, but it doesn't make sense. Why is this going on? And this is where Maxine says, oh, they're not going to last forever. They'll go away when we get to the place, the red place. And really,
it's a map, Daddy.
Again, I know that what you're saying is, I don't know why I don't think of her as creepy, because, boy, she is creepy. The shit that she says, this is like, she is creepy as hell, but I love her. I really do like her. Maybe it's just because she's so small and she has the dog or whatever. I think she's great. But, yeah, the mom's trying to understand, like, what are you talking about? Like, the place that you're going to go or whatever. And she's like, it's a map. Look, we're here. It shows, like, on the shoulder. And we have to get here, which is pretty much, like, over his heart.
I'm going to this whole thing where I can understand that Maxine can read this goddamn thing because she is also connected to the red. But I look at this tattoo. I'm like, I have no idea what you're talking about.
Yeah, I don't either.
How
well,
are you over here on the shoulder and you got to get to the heart?
And when they do get there, things get thrown topsy-turvy, exactly what Maxine is and what Buddy is. But in the meantime, the neighbor grabs Cliff, because Cliff's there. He's digging things. He's trying to cover these things up. And it's, again, if it's 3 a.m., 3:45 in the morning, this fat ass wakes up and sees Cliff in the backyard. He thinks, he doesn't know he's trying to put something back. No. So he comes in, but he's an asshole, and he really gets physical.
Look, Mr. Fat Man, I just want you to know, my sister, she resurrected your dead pet.
Yeah,
I'm
your
trying
dead
to dig
pet.
A hole in your backyard to put it back where it belongs. Calm down, sir. Go back to bed.
And this guy is basically like, you know what? I knew you freaks. And it's funny because these dead animals are like right behind him in the house. They're trying to keep them away. The guy is really, he's really strangling Cliff. He's hurting him. And that's when Cliff's like, you know, give him an elephant punch, Dad. In the meantime, Maxine goes to town and gives him a chicken leg.
And her freaking red powers are crazy because she fucking turns his entire arm into a goddamn bird talent.
Yeah, like a chicken leg type thing, and it's crazy. And again, you see this, and he looks at it. It's horrific, and he's like, ah! And then you go to the next thing. Buddy has all these goddamn tattoos. The guy is a chicken leg. And you look at Maxine behind, and she looks so angry. And again, it is a horror type thing, but I love her. And she's like, you leave my big brother alone. And he's yelling, my hand. and that's where Ellen, the mother, realizes and says, listen, you got to fix this. You got to give him back his regular hand. And she's like, but he hurt Cliff. And they're like, you just have to do it. Please,
this is something
please,
we
got to
do. You can't just turn people's arms.
We're going to be in
lights.
Big trouble. And then she does turn it back. But it doesn't look like it turns back in any way that's not going to hurt. I mean, it looks bad. The guy runs away. And like, I'm calling the cops. And now Ellen thinks they're going to. Yeah. And Ellen thinks they're going to take her away. They're going to take my baby away because, she just turned a guy's hand into a chicken leg. She has dead animals following around like she is a goddamn freak.
She's a monster.
Yeah, she goes, and that's when Buddy makes the joke. He's like, Cliff says my tattoos are badass because Buddy says, we have to. Me and Maxine have to go. We got to figure this out. You and Cliff have to stay. I'll give you this. You know, my buddy in the police department, Crenshaw. I'll give you his number. If anything goes wrong, you call him. But you can't come with us. Where
and
we're
either
going,
way, though,
only we
it's
can go.
Like, you know, there's no proof here. It's his word against ours about
really,
whether or not my daughter
you think
turned
the guy's
his fucking
gonna
arm
call.
Into a chicken leg.
Yeah, the guy's gonna call and go. Yeah, I want to report that somebody. Fuck it, hang up. Basically, all I think that the guy would do is call and say that Cliff was trespassing.
All right, let's put a pause on this. We'll do an experiment right now. I'm going to call the cops on
cops and
Logan.
Say you have a chicken hand.
I'm going to say that your son Logan went and turned my arm into a chicken leg.
Yeah,
and then I'll see what happens.
Yeah, and I think you're getting arrested for a false report. But yeah, that freaking piece of shit. But yeah, they're packing up, and I don't know about you. They go and Buddy's getting dressed. Maxine's getting dressed. It's funny because Maxine is giving the orders. She's like, okay, now you all stay in the basement like I told you, okay? And you take care of my mommy. Don't let that bad Mr. Duffy or no one else be mean to her. But when you look at her now, obviously in 2011, you wouldn't think this, looks so much like Laura in the Logan
definitely.
Movie.
That's exactly what
and
I thought
it,
of, too.
I think that actually for where the timing is now, it makes it that much better to me. It's so cool. She has her sunglasses on. She's getting ready. She's not scared. She's not scared at all. And she's just like, you know, we're going to get it done. And
well, that's
Cliff's
the thing
pissed.
Is, it's all, that's also scary to me where she is not scared because she is driven by this purpose that only she understands.
She understands.
She is this otherworldly thing that is taking over her mind and made her something more than she like.
And again,
a four-year-old
you have
girl.
Buddy.
Like, that's terrifying.
And Buddy doesn't think anything different of it. Either he knows that she's right. He has the idea. You know what? We have to follow her. Cliff's pissed. He wants to go. Like, why can't I come? And she's like, because you don't got powers like me and Daddy. And that is something that will
continue
on.
Yeah, but I got a rat
on.
Tail.
Yeah, I got a rat tail. Look at me. But yeah, they're gonna go off and they're gonna follow the
screw
animals.
This, guys. I'm gonna ride my dirt bike to the mall.
Yeah, I'm gonna go. right. But in the meantime,
Guns and Roses on a boombox.
Yeah,
my buddy.
I'm gonna listen on the boombox. And ride on my dirt bike. It wouldn't shock me if he had a dirt bike and was fucking peeling out all around. He's like also might be a little Kelly Leak in him as well.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah, they want to know where to go, and that's where Maxine says, listen, we follow the animals. The animals know the way. They'll show us the way to go. And she points up, and they take off and say goodbye. Now, in the meantime, we go to the San Diego Zoo, and this is where we're going to find the three hunters. We're going to see them in the real world, where they have some hippos that have become pregnant. I mean pregnant in a disgusting fucking way. And these three guards, these three guys at
I'm telling you, you never saw the movie, but it reminds me of Slither when this one woman is freaking, you know, she has been impregnated by these freaking worm things.
Just, it's
and
so
when they
disgusting.
Open the door, she's gigantic and just bulbous. And she's like, God damn, now I can't think of the line, but like, I think of the Clint Howard from Ticks. I'm infested.
It's crazy. It's so disgusting. And these three guys, they're like, hey, you know what? The hippos are pregnant. It's like, how could they be pregnant? We don't even have males here. And they head off, and that's where you see.
Look.
And it is the rot. It is the
and
rot.
Then you
and
just
it's their
run.
Way. Yeah. And that's where they say run. In the meantime, you have Buddy and Maxine finding their way into the red. And it's funny. It's almost like the Indiana Jones where you have the map, but this is the crazy fucked up map of veins on Buddy. And it does. It shows you they're going. Maxine's talking to a snake. She's looking. They're following
some
birds
mosquitoes.
Or whatever. Yeah. And they get
dragon
to the tree.
Flies.
They get to the life tree. And I do like it too because it's just there. We actually saw it in the Poison Ivy. It's very similar to Poison Ivy in the All-Star Batman because it's in the middle of a desert. It looks like it's just there. And even Buddy says, you know, why doesn't anybody else know about this? And she's like, I think that it's just special. Only special people like me and you can see it. And I thought that was really cool.
Well, it's so weird though, having this, you know, this life tree and having, I didn't even think about that connection to the Poison Ivy thing for All-Star Batman.
Yeah.
But like, it's so weird having a tree being the avatar of the red.
Yeah, it is. You know what I'm saying? The thing is, I like how they make it because the
I'm not the avatar
roots,
of the red, but like, you know,
or the,
yeah, like the
way into it and the place. The way they make it is that basically the roots are almost like veins. Yeah. And even when Maxine goes and touches it, she gets blood on her. And then Buddy touches it and basically says, you know, ooh, it's reacting. It actually has like a reaction to
like
it.
Like a muscle.
Yeah. And she says, we got to go inside. And Buddy doesn't know what's going on. Like, what? What are you going? No, Daddy, just be quiet. Just let us let it take us. And it does. It takes them into the red. She says, into the red. And they go in. And now they're in the red. And in the meantime, at that zoo, we figure pretty quickly that the hippos had given birth to the goddamn rot. And these three guards, or whatever they are, the guys at the zoo, are now the hunters. They have taken the skin of the people and they have fed them. You see them. You see them eating them and assume their form. And the big tell is basically the goddamn goofy ass face. They do. They look hideous, but also the
flies.
They
become so perverted and exaggerated of their features as it progresses. Like this whole form, they can't hold it. And at first, it's weird because I almost thought of it almost like Edgar from Men in Black, where they actually
take the skin. That's what I thought it was. It actually really looks like that, though. It does have that look.
But it goes against that later on when we have Crenshaw show up.
Crenshaw actually is taken over, but he is still alive. It seems like they, if they feed slowly, they can make the form last. And I don't even mean like – it looks like with Crenshaw at one point, they might have taken a nibble off of him to assume
his
form.
Yeah, I don't know.
Even though it says, I'm going to take your skin and it's going to hurt. That's the one. One thing I will say, that's one of the only things in this that was a little bit confusing to me, and it was Crenshaw that made it confusing.
And also the idea, I would like to know a little bit more. Maybe it does explore in future volumes of Animal Man. I doubt it, though, but I just want to know why these hippos at the San Diego Zoo would give birth to the rot.
I guess that they just, the rot, that was their way to come out.
Because they are connected to the red to a degree.
You know what I'm saying?
They are their own thing, but this is the idea that these hippos out of nowhere would
but
give birth
to these
three monsters.
But that basically gave birth to them into the world and to go and get Maxine and Buddy and, you know, the family. And yeah, it is, but I guess you could just say maybe they were sick. I wish that there was something about that that might have been.
I just wish there was a little bit more.
Well, we go and we continue on, and Maxine and Buddy are in the red, and they go and they follow it. And Maxine says, "Hey, listen, just follow it. Just follow. We can't get lost here. This is where we belong."
I don't
want to
because it's the scariest shit.
And it's just it is, and you have a couple pages of just hideous looking fucking cut meat and bone and hair, and it's disgusting.
And
but
Buddy just being perverted and twisted inside
twisted
out.
Around.
Like, he looks like a Cronenberg creature at this point.
Yeah, yeah. A lot of it does look like Cronenberg stuff. They end up where the old avatars are. They end up where the old avatars of the red are, where they go to visit them. In the meantime, though, you go back to these three fucking rot, the hunters, and they show up at the Baker's house, and then they decide to split up. They decide two of them are going to go into the red
and
go and attack.
At this point, they're already all fucked up. From their time from the San Diego Zoo to the Baker residence, like, they have worms.
They're falling apart.
They're fucking like tumors are growing out the sides of their faces.
Oh,
it's
disgusting.
Hideous.
It's disgusting. And they even say, boy, we shouldn't have eaten that quick. We should have saved some to keep our
form.
A lot
of these at points when I see these characters like that, it really reminds me of a Steve Dillon kind of work from Preacher and
shit
it does.
Like that.
For how,
and
like,
I know Steve Dillon did do some Animal Man in the past, so that might be trouble for him and might even be going with that as well. But yeah, they're there and they decide to split up. They have one guy stays to take care of Ellen and more Ellen than even Cliff. And the reason they say that is basically she gave birth to an avatar already, which she needs Maxine.
Still,
and again, this is also one of the first things that you are pretty much given the idea that Maxine is the most important part of the red. Because she said she's already given birth, and you're like, given birth? She didn't give birth to Buddy. Oh, yeah, Maxine. And, you know, she could do it again. So you take care of her. The other two are going to go into the red and just go full out frontal assault and take care of things. And it continues. At this point on, it just becomes just hideous, fucking just disgusting things. But you go back to the red, and Buddy finds out pretty much what is going on. He's talking to the
old
totems.
And what his role in all of this is.
Yeah, and he finds out that he isn't the avatar of the Red at all, that Maxine is. He is just – he's almost like a placeholder.
Yeah.
They didn't have an avatar. He was going to be involved when she was born, but in the meantime, he's there to protect her. They gave him powers, but they're not the same. They're not the full Red powers. And even – I like how Jeff Lemire does go, because the old continuity we said at the beginning was that an alien had given him powers, and they explained to him, listen, we did that, we gave you this to make it make sense in your head, and also we gave you a costume and we made you a superhero, because that
was like the
part,
moon landing, buddy.
Yeah.
It's all fabricated.
Yeah, it's all fabricated. But I really like the way that they say that we gave you a costume to go with the times, and it really did. And you know, with the emerging superheroes in your world, this would make sense in your mind. But yeah, it's all Maxine. Maxine is the avatar of the Red. She's the true deal. Buddy just has to protect her because they're getting ready for war, and Buddy doesn't want to hear it. Buddy tries over and over. Listen, give it to me. Let me be the avatar. Let me fight. She's a 4-year-old. She can't do it.
Exactly.
Unfortunately, at this point, shit has started, and it doesn't matter. A 4-year-old is going to have to save the world, whether you like it or not. You go back to Maxine or Cliff and Ellen. Fucking Cliff is trying to play video games,
Ellen,
and these dead animals are attacking him.
Cliff thinks this is all pretty cool.
Oh,
Ellen
yeah.
is taking this way better than I ever thought she would, because she's trying to get some work done. And Cliff is playing video games while these boned out animals are playing with them.
It looks like they're tickling them and they're trying to get to the controller.
But the thing is, when Ellen comes over to the couch, she's like, there's too much going on, I can't get any work done. And she sits down to play a video game with Cliff with these dead animals. I'm like, man, you do not need to be this comfortable with all this.
Yeah, you're very comfortable.
Somewhere wrong in your life to get to this point.
Well, the phone rings. The doorbell rings, and she goes and answers it. Now again, Cronenberg. There is a squidly looking intestine rot.
No.
The guy.
I'll go Cronenberg. This is more of the Thing in my mind.
He
for
is
whatever
reason. Yeah, really, it is just disgusting. I like that you see shoes over. You know, he's still got some shoes on somewhat. And yeah, she doesn't know what's going on. And this goes back and forth. You go back and forth between Buddy and Maxine and Cliff and Ellen. And when you go back to the Red, it continues again. It continues with Buddy. Like, you know what? She's only 4 years old. You want a war? Let me, and it says she has no choice. It's her fate. She has to do it. And then this is where it also points out. It says it has already begun. The other is active. Both the Red and the Green must prepare. And that is the first hint. Now they go and spell it out completely. Swamp Thing is involved. And just to pause a second, this does lead into one of the biggest crossovers and longest running crossovers of the New 52, when we end up going with the Rot and this whole thing, the Rot World deal. And the Rot is pretty impressed. I mean, they are badass, and this is where they realize the Rot has gone into the Red. And I think I read something, and they said they really pushed it in what I read, that Maxine and Buddy going into the Red really did open the back door for the Rot to go in as well. And then you see pretty much all the troubles that happen. It is Buddy and Maxine causing the troubles as they're trying to save the people as well.
Well, I'm telling you, they are really unprepared for what's going on, because these former avatars of the Red, they're spelling a lot of stuff out. They're not spelling out what these heroes of the book need to know, because they go about things thinking it is the right thing, when all in all, it is fucking their whole cause up
it
completely.
Is. And I really like later, you get Sox, who is the cat
a
that ends up joining.
Avatar,
and he even says, listen, you guys have gotten so complacent. I agree with them. They're just sitting there. They basically almost are like, listen, Maxine's going to have to save the world, but until then, we're going to sit here and we're going to relax. And they're not going to do anything. And they say they can't. But they really aren't. So in the meantime, you have Cliff and the dead animals actually save the day. The Rot guy, the hunter, is attacking, and Cliff is yelling. Ellen just can't even bear to look.
Nope.
And those dead animals attack. And it's weird, too, because
gives the mother and son an opportunity.
Yeah, gives them a time to
go.
And it's weird because I kept thinking that those animals should have some rot in them.
I would think so as well,
but
I don't know, because of Maxine's, you know, more power than she has with animals.
That's what I guess, that she might have taken them out of
originally a part of the Red. Yes. You know, it's like almost like something of the same nature like that. She's able to tap into both.
Yeah, and he even says, the hunter says, what are these dead things? So pretty, but not of the other. Yeah. And it's like there's something even different. And they attack him, like you said. They give him time to go, and they bust out with their car. They run over it. It's funny. Cliff yells, holy crap. And the bombs yell, watch your mouth, young man, as they go.
And I'll tell you, when he says holy crap and she's all like, watch your mouth, I'm like, you were just letting him play one of the most violent video games.
Yeah, one of the most violent video games ever.
And you were playing with him.
Yeah, plus earlier he said that the tattoos were badass. And, yeah. And Buddy laughed. But yeah, and then she's like, I can't believe I married a superhero as they're going. But while this is going on, the rot is in the red, and they are taunting Buddy and Maxine. They're attacking, and even then Maxine can sense that something's wrong with Cliff and her mom. But in the meantime, Buddy just goes to
fear within him.
Yeah, and Buddy just starts attacking, and he's in the red, so he is very powerful,
and I'm
but not powerful enough.
I love the aspect that now we are actually in the red, and when he calls upon the life web, they activate some power. Like his paw becomes that of a cat's paw, like a tiger.
It actually becomes the deal.
That.
Yeah,
and when he like calls upon the gorilla, he becomes this gorilla humanoid with the freaking like a giant freaking head, and the freaking arms are like out like a elongated a bit for it. I'm like, this is really cool.
Yeah, and he yells to Maxine, get away. She goes to run, and then she goes to the other totems and says, hey, Mr. Totems, help my daddy, please. And they're like, no, our fight's over, child, but yours is just beginning. You have to be the one
to
help
him. Useless fucks.
And yeah, it gets so mad. You go back to Ellen. That's where Ellen calls Crenshaw, and that's what Buddy said, to call him if there was a problem. She calls him. He's like, hey, I'll be right there. Fucking worst day. The worst day for Crenshaw. The worst thing that ever happened to him is he met Buddy Baker.
I'm telling you, this still has parallels to me of freaking Terminator 2.
Yeah,
where,
it does. You know,
we have the T-1000 is after John Connor and like all that stuff, and he's able to take on the likeness of the people in order to get close to the freaking
Terminator. It is very much like it.
Like, you know, even Sox becomes the Terminator in my mind, where it's like, you cannot go after them. The freaking probability of them going after this person to get to you is high as hell. You can't do it. You have to, in my mind, you got to become Harrison Ford and witness. Get the fuck to Amish country and stay low.
Yeah, really. Get to Amish country and really stay low. In the red, Buddy's getting the shit kicked out of him. He really is. He's going to die. And then that's when Maxine pretty much gathers up all her strength and unleashes the power of the red and pretty much dissolves the 200.
And dispels them right back to the red.
Yeah, they're gone.
Like, I mean, to the rot.
Yeah, and they're gone at that moment. They're not dead, but they're gone. And that's the worst part of it is later the totems even explain, listen, you can't get rid of the rot. You just can't. They're always around.
It's a part of life.
Yeah, it's part of the deal. So we didn't get rid of them. You made them. You hurt them. They disappeared from now. You're safe for now. But you didn't you didn't get rid of them. But this is where Crenshaw gets his. When Crenshaw shows up to get, help Ellen and Cliff, he is attacked by that other hunter. He becomes that freaking morphed out crazy deal with his goddamn fucking flies around him.
Even the one hunters are like, this will hurt very badly, but I need your skin. And then like I'm like, okay, Crenshaw is done, but
he's
later
dead.
On we have this whole scene. It's very, and I'm telling you, I keep throwing these
and
movie
references
out there.
And he does talk then, later. That's what really threw me off, because when
like,
he's alive later, it's crazy.
We see when Crenshaw, the fake Crenshaw, picks up Maxine and Cliff. They're driving away to Ellen's mother's house. We have this whole like see through the trunk thing where we get to see that Crenshaw is still
alive. Yeah, he's
in
the trunk. Yeah, it's pretty crazy.
And it really reminded me from Dusk Till Dawn at that point in the beginning when the Gecko brothers had that.
It is very, like you said, here's the thing. You're talking about it. It's because it is hard to explain some of this. It's very cinematic the way it's spelled out. And yeah, they end up, like you said, they have Crenshaw, who's actually the hunter, and they're going to Ellen's mother's house. This is where Buddy had always said it's almost like their safe house.
Yeah.
That if anything ever goes real wrong,
you
go
you
to your mom's
when
farm.
When your husband's a superhero, you need to have some contingency plans laid out.
And they do. They have a contingency plan. You go to your mother's, and you know whatever happens, I'll catch up with you later. In the meantime, in the red, Buddy is still he's dying, and that's when we said. Maxine just takes the whole red and it's great because she just dispels them in this huge flash of red.
Yeah.
And they're gone. But Buddy's still hurt. He's still fucked up.
He's got his
ribsides
ripped up. You
and
know,
that's
like
where
he is all unholy.
And the totems say, listen, you're the one who has to heal him. You can heal him. And she does. And she's like putting them back together and like, oh, it feels like clay and whatever.
But that was the creepiest thing to me, because like she's using her powers here where she has the chest is all ripped open. And she's like, looks at this gaping wound. Like, I don't know how to help. And then she starts just playing with it like dough. She's kneading it like dough and closing the wound up. Oh, it's like clay. I'm like, you creepy fucking little girl.
And she is, but yet she's pretty much the most powerful one in this. But she is the Avatar. And they set it up that, you know what, you got to protect her and do whatever you can, because this is going to be a war. You are going to be, going against this rot. And then what they do is they welcome them fully into the red, pretty much in a dream state like Red Deal, to show them exactly what the rot is. And even then, you have freaking Maxine. Neat. She's all excited. But
they're being enveloped by veins in order to get this vision. Neat. I'm like, no, it's terrifying.
And you find out these three were part of the red. And then eventually they were just the same. They went into the red when they died.
As their avatars, as the other ones we've seen.
And they were corrupted. They were corrupted by the power of the rot. The rot got a hold of them, said, we can offer you more power. This would be power, untold power. It's like the dark side. Yeah. And they said, that's how the Hunters Three were born. And they're basically trying to get a hold of Maxine, because this is the first time it seems that they could actually get a hold of a living avatar. And really, if they do that, it's the end of the world. The world will end. Buddy still is like, why do we have to do this? And why couldn't it just be me? But it can't. It's Maxine. Now that's where you get Mr. Sox, who ends up, it's a cat. And he ends up saying, listen, I'm going to go with them. And the other totems are saying, no, you can't. It's basically – it's like Themyscira. You leave the red, you can't come back. But really, if there's a reason to leave the red, it's now. And he's going to go and train Maxine. And right away, I love the interaction between the two of them, because they're like, what's your name? And he's like telling it. It's like, well, I was called Mr. Sox, but I prefer – oh, I'm going to call you Mr. Sox.
I like the name Ignatius. Like, Ignatius. I'm going to go with Sox.
Yeah, she's like, I'm going to – and she's four. I'm going to go with Sox. He's like, oh, you – bitch.
Is too, this part reminds me of the DCYU Dr. Fate thing, where we had Bastet in the form of a cat talking to Dr. Fate the whole time. And I hated it. Here I love it.
It's right away you like it, right? It seems so cool. And maybe it's just because Maxine is just a little kid and she wanted a pet. Now she gets her pet.
Even when they get reunited with the rest of the family, the cat can talk.
It's great, because you end up with Ellen back at her mom's house, and her mom hates Buddy. She always wanted her, this is what I told you would happen, whatever. And Ellen says, I always said if the children get involved, it's over, but I love them. I don't know what to do. In the meantime, they had left Crenshaw out in the car with Cliff. And she looks out and they're gone. Then the car, the trunk is open. And like you said before, we had seen that Crenshaw's body was in the trunk. So with the trunk open and them not there, they want to know what the hell's going on. And it's the crazy ass hunter. He has Crenshaw by the neck, and Crenshaw is talking. Like you said, he's still alive. And it's weird because he still has somewhat of his look. And I just thought he would have been stripped clean of skin.
Oh, me as well.
Yeah, so it did take me. And the worst part is he's also pulling Cliff by his goddamn hair. I told you, he should have had a haircut. But he gets to the edge of a lake. He starts to feed again on Crenshaw, which is disgusting.
And completely feed on Crenshaw at this point, where he's eating him from the fucking legs up.
And his guts are coming out. His intestines are coming out. And Ellen goes, gets a shotgun. She's going to head out because she hears
and
a
And now
yell.
She's Sarah Connor. She is. Totally T2.
Yep, yeah. In the meantime, you have Buddy and Maxine flying in with Sox. And they're going to go find they find the house is in disarray. So the Buddy knows that they must have went to her mother's house. We're going to grandma's house, off we go. In the meantime, this hideous looking hunter is just feeding on Crenshaw, and like you said, he doesn't have legs anymore and his intestines are coming out. It's just so goddamn,
it's so bad.
It is so,
and it almost
disgusting.
Looks like when he's doing this that Crenshaw is doing a handstand in the lake, right at the foot of him,
it's
as
so
this thing
disgusting
is eating him from the legs up.
It's so
in the air.
He's half
God.
eaten with his guts all coming out. Ellen shows up.
The monster's all Cronenberged up.
Yeah. Oh, Ellen shows up and shoots the monster, and then she's reloading. And as she's reloading, you have buddies flying in to figure out what's happening with Maxine and Sox. But yeah, at the big time, there's trouble at the lake. And the goddamn hunter grabs Ellen and looks like, even at the point, has a tentacles and coming out of its mouth like tongues, and one of them's going up her nose. Oh, it's disgusting. And it's like, oh, so tasty. All of a sudden, there's a boom, and Cliff has shot the fucking head off this hunter. It was so awesome. And it's great, too, because the kickback.
He's lucky he didn't kill his goddamn
mother. Oh, I know. But again, at this point, you really have to just go. But it doesn't really hurt the rot. It just kind of forms again. It is like the T-1000.
Exactly.
I do like I said, I like when Cliff shoots and it sends him flying back. I thought that was a nice touch because there's no way a little kid like that's shooting a gun. And yeah, it's like, you're next, boy. And that's when Buddy shows up and just starts going to town.
Wailing on him.
Oh, my God. Just going to town. And it's pretty – and again, it's a long out fight. Now, the problem is we've already seen Buddy fighting the rot.
The rot,
and he didn't do very good. And while this is going on, he left Maxine back with the grandmother. So he says to Ellen and Cliff, get the fuck out of here, go back, go to Maxine. And he's fighting the hunter, and he's not doing well again. And the hunter starts infecting him to show him.
When he freaking injects his tongue into Buddy's
cheek.
He
wants to show him what the rot really is.
And the fucking snot's just running out of his nose.
Yeah,
and
at one point he looks a little like Jimmy Durante, and then he gets worse. Aaron.
Then he looks like the Elephant Man.
Oh, and there's pus coming out, and he sees what will happen if the rot wins. And it's almost like Coraline to me, if you saw Coraline the movie. And like Maxine is this rotted out, like little girl, mangled up old woman, little girl. Oh, it's disgusting. And she's like, hello, Daddy, and at that point, Buddy is just organs, and then she just starts eating the flesh off the face, and it's so goddamn disgusting. And that's where he's yelling. But even then, the hunter's like, "Won't she be beautiful?" And he's yelling, "She's just a little girl." I'm like, "He's not listening to you, Buddy," because he's like, "Just leave her alone." In the meantime, there's Crenshaw, guts coming out.
It's almost at this point though, where it seems like, you know, he's trying to make the same deal with this last hunter that he was with the former avatars of the Red. Like, look, she's just a little girl. If you need to do something, do it to
me.
I'll do anything to keep my daughter safe.
Exactly. And he'll sacrifice himself for it. In the meantime, Maxine, back at the farm, knows that Daddy's in trouble. And she says, I need to help him. And Ellen's like, no. You know, he's okay. He's a superhero. And she's like, no, I have to go. And that's where the cat talks. And like, the cat talks, Cliff yells. And the grandmother's like, that surprises you with all the shit. But what Maxine then does,
where she puts her hands on the ground and just gets the full power over the red of anything in the proximity.
Of anything
to come
in there.
And help
you
her
see
father.
Ants, worms, and that it all continues on. And it's like I said, Buddy's still fighting, but then all of a sudden all these animals come out, and it's like that Brendan Fraser movie, Furry Vengeance, Eric. That award winning movie, Furry Vengeance.
I'll talk about cool movies. You talk about Furry Vengeance.
Yes, Furry Vengeance. But you have raccoons, a bear, wolves. They all come out and attack the rot. Now, the worst part of this is it seems to be part of their plan, because as these animals eat the rot, they become infected. And as this hunter's going, he's like, don't you see what you've done? You'd open the door. The rot is in it all now. It spreads through the red.
Now the rot is in the red and being able to go about.
And it says, the rot is everything we have already won. And that's where Buddy's like, oh, no, because then
those animals
just look back.
And then Maxine realizes the connection.
Yeah, she knows. She's like, they tricked me. And she's a four-year-old, and she freaked out. Her dad was dying. Her dad was going to die. And she did do the heroic thing. Unfortunately, at this point, Buddy is running away from the rot-infested animals that had just saved his life, and he just comes flying out.
Vengeance.
And it's so funny. He gives Cliff what appears to be a Steven Seagal clothesline, but he's actually grabbing him to run. And he just runs out of the woods. He's like, we got to get going, get in the car. And I love this, even this little part, like, we got to get going, we get in the car. And Ellen's like, we're not all going to fit. And get in my RV. The keys are in. They jump in the RV and they head off. And the worst is Grandmom says, and this is such a horror movie thing to me, because she's like, oh no, we left my dog back. Poor Spot. And I thought, you bitch, you better not go back. And even Mr. Sox is like, no. We're not going back. And
Sox is a Terminator in this. Yeah, he knows what's going to happen.
And Buddy's like, I think we can outrun a few wild animals. And that's where Sox is like, you don't understand, Buddy Baker. It's not just them. It'll spread now. The blackness like a plague. There's no stopping it. No matter where we go, the rot will follow. And it is. Poor Spot. He's dead, Eric. He's part of the rot.
Oh, I'm saying that, like, at that point, then a freaking, you know, a fly comes out of this fucking rotted up raccoon, and then the fly enters Spot's ear, and then just goes into the fucking.
And
rot,
I really like that too, because now it shows you don't even have to have an attack. It's going to spread. It's going to spread just like a virus through everything. And the last thing that Mr. Sox says then is the swamp thing can save us now.
At this point, too, this really seems like the blackest night, where the rings would come out of the mouth and then take over people and make them like a black lantern and shit like that. It's very
crazy.
Reminiscent of that to me, too, when the flies come out of the mouth and infect the other people, and then they become this rotted character that fucking move on and spread more disease and damage.
And I even like the part where they have at the end where the fly comes out and infects Spot or whatever, because then the one dog falls over and it's like the rotted out version of the tree. It looks like that. And I don't know if that's actually a shadow or whatever that is on the ground, or if it is that, but it is like the rotted version of that tattoo that was on Buddy, of the life tree and the red. Maxine unfortunately has opened up the red to the rot, even though she's supposed to be the savior. The last part of this actually goes, that pretty much ends, there is a little bit at the end of this last part, but it pretty much ends that first. It ends the hunt. Because in the last part of it, we go and we see what the movie Tights was that Buddy was in. And I like it. I don't think we have to go fully into it. To me, the art style in this is very reminiscent of the Hawkeye book in the
very
Marvel.
Noir.
And it is. It's very noir. It's also, I'm telling you, this could be an image issue right here as well, the way this Tights is. And it's about a former superhero that's trying to get his life back together. He's divorced from his wife. He hasn't seen his kid. He's trying to get jobs and he can't. He seems to be a bit of an alcoholic or whatever, but he was the Red Thunder, I believe, is what the superhero was. And he wants to get back to doing that. And when he actually does, he gets the shit kicked out of him like Kick-Ass and ends up in the hospital. And it's really good. I mean, it's good. It's kind of odd because it's just thrown in here, but I like to see it just because it does mirror a bit of what's happened to Buddy. So you see the movie, this indie movie he was in, mirrors his life, but boy, he got the shit kicked out of him pretty bad. And then the tie-in then is you see that it's actually Cliff in the RV watching the movie on his phone. And
even though we saw him drop his phone in the last issue.
Yeah, I know. He dropped it when fucking Buddy grabbed him. Maybe he has
like
a couple.
Steven Seagal.
They're rich. They're rich, Eric. But this is them on the road, and they're trying to figure out what to do next. And that's where Sox says, we got to find Alec Holland. He's a being of great power, and he too faces the rot. He can help us protect the girl. And Ellen, just the wife and mother, she's just like, it's too much. It's too much. I can't deal with this. And Maxine's like, it's okay, mommy. Everything's going to be okay. We just listen to Sox. And then they're going to do it. And Buddy says the last thing, he's like, we better do it quick, because I think we should do it soon, because, you know, it's starting to get pretty dark out there. And in the meantime, you see, it's such a horror ending. You see this dead, like, wolf or whatever it is on the side of the road. It's all fucking, it's roadkill, and all these flies are on it. And then it focuses up onto its eye, where it looks like it's still alive with the rot. And I'm like, Jesus Christ. But that's pretty much it. I loved it. I really did. I thought it
was
great.
I was surprised how good of a time I was having reading the series for how long. I feel like, you know, I put it aside. Like, I'll get to this eventually, but I never really thought I would. Doing this, though, I'm happy as fuck that I did because and I had a good time reading it. And it's
like
very
you said,
quick.
You said it great too, because when we first started going in the New 52, I had just jumped into comics. And yeah, when I want to jump into comics, I want to read Batman. I want to read Superman. I want to see the Justice League. This would have been at that point in 2012. We ended up going in a year later. It would have been too far out for me at that point, I think. Later on, around issue 19, I think it was, they also had an annual that I ended up reading the annual and then liking that so much that I did go back and read this arc and a little bit. But I didn't read the whole every issue of Animal Man. I actually want to now. I really, really like this.
Well, we had weird things because we were reading, you know, Frankenstein's Agent of Shade, which had one issue was like a tie into the Rot World type of shit. And like reading them, like I have no idea what's going on in the book.
And I'll tell you too, I think that because of the sign of the times, back when we started, we did have a plethora of books that you could grab. You could grab a dark book. You were reading Justice League Dark. You had Demon Knights. You had Man of War, if you liked war books. You had All-Star Western.
All-Star Western,
you had all these things thrown in that there was such a wide variety that some things like an Animal Man could have been in the cracks. Yeah,
in
the Wildstorm. You had Grifter and Static Shock, stuff like that.
Stormwatch.
Now, with Rebirth, you don't have that buffet anymore. You really have guys in tights jumping around and doing things. You don't have books like this. So actually going back now, I think it's more impressive now than it would have been even then. That if you go back and read this, you're like, Jesus Christ, this DC actually had books like this? It really is shocking if you are
that
just
joining
in. That wasn't
continuity with the rest of the world as well.
Yeah, and almost like you'll have to say when the New 52 started – it was more about – it really was more about giving people variety and things like that. I couldn't say that they were sitting there thinking – yeah, and taking chances. I can't think that they would sit there and say, you know what? We're going to have men – we're going to have two war books because those are going to sell. No, they just threw it out there. They were trying to give people options and things like that. Like you said, taking chances. I think that because of those chances, because of a lot of books that did fail – I think that when they did decide to do Rebirth, what they meant by legacy and all that stuff was we're going to go back to the safe choices and we're going to go back to the bread and butter. Unfortunately, you don't get things like this. So I do hope that as Rebirth goes on, we really don't have a lot of dark books at all. So I not even just dark, but just variety. And I hope they do get back to that. But if I was going to rate this, I would say I'd probably give it a 9 out of 10. Overall, and that's all six issues. There are some issues I think I would have gone, you know, a little lower, 8.5 or whatever, but some I would have went even higher. So as a whole, I think I'll go 9 out of 10. I think it's really impressive.
As a whole, I'd probably go for 8.5 out of 10. Okay. I'm like, going into this too, it's like, this series that Jeff Lemire, you know, we got to get this character reestablished. We got to get everybody to know who he is going in. But it's really taking a lot from Grant Morrison bringing in the family aspect and shit like that. And Jamie Delano's freaking, you know, his introduction to the Red and the Vertigo series. We get right into that with this. And it's like even the horror themed aspect that Jamie Delano really like pumped into that book. It's all right here. So it's doing new stuff while also, you know, bringing back the old stuff that people really enjoyed in the Vertigo series. And I found myself really enjoying it and glad that we got the chance to read this volume.
Yeah,
this book.
That's why one of the reasons why we said we wanted to do this podcast wasn't just because we wanted to tell everybody about the New 52. It also forces us to go back and read stuff that we didn't fully read and things like that. And even things where we may have read and now we go back with a different perspective. And maybe, like you even said, you went back to the Justice League last week or last episode and you kind of – it wasn't the same as when you first read. So I do like that. But that is it, Eric. That is the end of the Animal Man Volume 1, The Hunt. And I will say next episode, which will come out in a couple weeks, will be Justice League International Volume 1.
And I really liked that when it first came out.
And that's the thing.
This is where
I was leading into, because a lot of people have read ahead and were reading it, and I'm getting advanced reviews where people are upset about it. Me and you had a lot of fun. That was one of the earlier books. And I remember that was actually my first introduction to Booster Gold. Yeah. Remember, I used to call him Buster Gold,
just to
piss you off. I'm like, yeah, I like that Buster Gold. You would get so upset. But yeah, that was my introduction to Booster Gold. One of the earlier – I actually think that I read more of JLI than the actual Justice League first arc at one point, because we just, me and you both were like, yeah, we should get that. And we got it and ended up reading the first arc. And so, and then I went back and read the Justice League and stuff like that. So I really, really enjoyed it. But boy, people are, the advanced reviews are coming in from people in the Get Fresh crew. And they, they're not so impressed. So hopefully, hopefully we'll be able to convince them otherwise. It's weird because I think this New 52 Review podcast is the opposite of our regular podcast. Most of the time, people say our regular podcast, boy, I really like that issue until you guys talked about it, and then you made me realize that I hate it. We're like, we are the destroyer of dreams. Yep. Maybe in this New 52 one, we are the giver of dreams, Eric, right?
And that'd nightmares be nice. With this goddamn book.
And nightmares, yeah. But yeah, if you are into any sort of horror comic or dark thing or just want to check it out, go and get this, the Animal Man Volume 1, The Hunt. It is really, really good. I don't think that anybody could complain.
Bam,
yeah, really.
Right on.
Yeah, really. It has a lot of cinematic stuff in it.
I didn't even put that together until we started talking about it. I'm like, this has a lot to blow. Yeah. It's just like Terminator 2.
And I'll say, I don't often like really give things like my full out endorsement because I'm always afraid people will kill me and get mad that they waste some money. But yeah, I think that you could go on. I think it's around $11 somewhat on Amazon. It's worth
horror themed stuff or the Vertigo like line as a whole. There's no reason you won't enjoy this.
Yep. Like I said, next episode, Justice League International Volume 1. And thanks for listening.
Everyone freeze. This is a robbery. I said freeze.
Animal Man!
Stop right there. All right, carry on with your banking transactions, citizens.